May 12th, 13th, and 14th, 1960, students from the colleges and universities of the San Francisco Bay Area staged an impressive and widely publicized protest against the House Committee on Un-American Activities. Here, on tapes made on the spot and in the words and voices of many of the participants and organizers, is the story of that protest.
2 weeks before the committee was scheduled to arrive, a small group of students met on the Berkeley campus of the University of California, as they had met the year before when many of California's teachers had received subpoenas from this same committee. This group was composed of the leadership of existing recognized campus organizations, visit of the House Un-American Activities Committee to the Bay Area. Their first meeting was held on Friday, April 29th, 1960. Subsequent meetings were held during the following 2 weeks. This group, the Students for Civil Liberties, decided to circulate a petition asking the committee not to hold its hearings in San Francisco and to organize a mass protest meeting in Union Square, followed by a picket of the City Hall. The students felt that past performances and present philosophy of the committee had made its purposes, defamation, guilt by association, and the public pillory, clear enough. Nothing was so un-American as this inquisitorial group. Nothing was such a threat to the very principles upon which this democracy was founded than a committee of Congress, which persecuted for beliefs and associations. A man must answer to society for what he does, they thought, not for what he believes.
Inspired, perhaps, by the sit-in movement in the South, that expression of growing belief among the youth of this nation that direct action is one effective avenue to a sometimes remote and inaccessible government, the Union Square rally and the mass picketing of City Hall were successfully planned and held by the Students for Civil Liberties. A careful liaison with the law enforcement agencies was maintained. The San Francisco Police Department was informed of the plans a week in advance. Thus, they were apprised of both the demonstrations and of the group responsible for their organization. Listen to the testimony of San Francisco Chief of Police Thomas Cahill, testifying before the House Subcommittee.
And we then, in turn, deal with those people who are interested from a standpoint of protesting, and we attempt to set up an orderly and an organized protest system. That was done by some of the men in my Bureau of Detectives in dealing with the civil liberties student groups. And as a result of that work, which was done over a period of possibly a week, the demonstration at the Union Square, the march to the City Hall, and the conduct of the students of that group or identified with that group outside of the City Hall was carried on in an orderly manner.
At the rally, two California State Assemblymen and a canon of the Episcopal Church addressed the assembled students and other spectators, numbering over 1,000. They asked for the abolition of the House Committee on Un-American Activities, which Representative James Roosevelt, in a speech before the lower house, had termed closer to being dangerous to America in its conception than most of what it investigates.
From Union Square and in full cooperation with the police, the group marched to City Hall and set up the picket line, which was to swell at one point in the three-day hearings to 3,000 souls. The line was monitored by volunteers from the student community who sought to preserve order and to maintain contact with law enforcement so that a minimum of friction might develop. They passed out a mimeographed sheet entitled Picket Line Procedure, prepared by the Students for Civil Liberties. Here is a quotation from that sheet.
All persons who participate in this line are expected to show goodwill and to be polite, calm, and reasonable to everyone, including the police, hecklers, the public, and other picketers. Do not show anger and do not use abusive language. Do not respond to hoots, jeers, or derogatory language. Do not debate with the public. Monitors are in charge of maintaining the order of the picket line, and you are expected to follow their directions. If you cannot abide by the decisions of the monitors, or if you cannot remain non-violent in character and in deed, please withdraw quietly from the line. Remember, your conduct must reflect the ideals for which we are demonstrating.
On the first day of the hearings, Congressman Willis from Louisiana described the committee's purpose.
The hearings which begin today in San Francisco are in furtherance of the powers and duties of the Committee on Un-American Activities, pursuant to Public Law 601 of the 7th and 9th Congress, which not only establishes the basic jurisdiction of the committee, but also mandates the committee, along with other standing committees of the Congress, to exercise continuous watchfulness of the execution of any laws, the subject of which is within the jurisdiction of the committee. In response to this power and duty, the Committee on Un-American Activities is continuously in the process of accumulating factual information respecting communists, the Communist Party, and the communist activities which will enable the Committee and the Congress to appraise the administration and operation of the Smith Act.
Despite this seemingly extensive catalog of accomplishments, the contribution by this committee to actual legislation has been slight, considering its long history and the size of its appropriation. One of the three acts which the committee invariably cites as the fruits of its labor was vetoed by President Truman on the grounds that it was unconstitutional. The bill was passed over his veto and is still being tested in the courts. Others were less convinced of the legislative mission of the committee.
They're using methods of intimidation and smear.
People from the committee had come to his place of work and apparently questioned his fellow workers and things like this, trying apparently to get him fired.
How did you arrange to have a marshal go to the job where I work and have a subpoena issued? How did you know that?
Yes, my subpoena was served on the job.
Chairman, again, stand on the grounds of the First Amendment, the committee's violation of the First Amendment, pertaining to my beliefs and association.
I have an additional reason in which I refuse to answer the question. One is the constitutional amendment, I believe the sixth, that gives a person who's accused of anything the right to confront his witnesses. Since I have not had that opportunity, and I apparently, from the past experience of this committee, am not about to get such opportunity, I will have to respectfully decline to answer any other questions.
If I've done anything illegal, I think you should take me into court where I can have adequate counsel.
If you will not require me to be a stool pigeon to any people or associations, I will gladly answer that question. I repeat the offer.
I challenge the moral right of this committee to ask me any questions regarding my beliefs.
I thought the witch hunts went out with Senator McCarthy. And as far as the purposes of this committee are concerned, I certainly do not agree with the explanation that you gave.
Now
my opinion of the purposes of this committee is somewhat different.
To this sort of charge, Mr. Willis replies,
A specific instances of who goes to jail as a result of a hearing, that's a coincidence. That's not the object of our hearings. If someone happens to have invoked the constitutional privilege improperly or abused it, that's a matter of law and for the Department of Justice. But if it does happen, it's not to our making. Our records are submitted to the Department of Justice, and we don't prosecute anybody, so we're not concerned about that at all. The commies say that this is just an expose, an exposure. That, again, is an incidental thing.
Now listen to the words of Justice Black of the United States Supreme Court.
The chief aim, purpose, and practice of the House Un-American Activities Committee, as disclosed by its many reports, is to try witnesses and punish them because they are or have been communists or because they refuse to admit or deny communist affiliations. The punishment imposed is generally punishment by humiliation and public shame. There is nothing strange or novel about this punishment. It is, in fact, one of the oldest forms of governmental punishment known to mankind. Branding, the pillory, ostracism, and subjection to public hatred being but a few examples of it.
And listen to the committee itself as it went on record, perhaps in an unguarded moment, in the House Reporter No. 1 of the first session of the 77th Congress.
This committee is the only agency of Congress with the power of exposure.
There are many phases of un-American activities that cannot be reached by legislative or administrative action. We believe that the committee has shown that fearless exposure is the answer.
Our obligation is to assemble facts that might lead to legislation,
said Mr. Willis. But this is difficult to reconcile with fearless exposure of areas which cannot be reached by legislative action.
The hearings began as scheduled and ran their usual course. Friendly witnesses chanted their answers as though they had them memorized, the familiar ritual of political absolution, although occasionally the apparently well-rehearsed performance broke down. Listen to this exchange between committee interrogator Richard Ahrens and friendly witness Carl Prussian.
I expect in the course of this interrogation to cover a number of areas with you. The outset, I should like to ask you, first of all, have you ever been a member of the Communist Party?
I have been a member of the Communist Party for approximately 26 years.
When did you join the Communist Party, and when did you finally irrevocably disassociate yourself from the Communist Party?
I joined the Communist Party in 1933, and I irrevocably disassociated myself with the Communist Party on August 12, 1959.
Something less than spontaneous, it seems. Later in the testimony of this witness, in an apparent appeal for the sympathy of the American public, the committee crossed the traditional line which has always separated the church and the state.
Mr. Prussian, earlier in these hearings, I was interrogating a lady, Mrs. Barbara Hartle, who had been in the conspiracy and who broke with the conspiracy. And in the course of the interrogation, I observed that in finding her way out of the conspiracy, back as an anti-communist, she had found her way back to God. And I heard snickering here by these young people.
I'm sorry.
Is the Communist Party within the framework of the communist operation, is there room for concepts of God and spiritual values as we are taught them at our mother's knee?
Mr. Prussian answered no.
All right, sir, now proceed.
As usual, the friendly witnesses were absolved of political guilt through the ritual of naming of names. The names of former associates, names which in any event were already available to the committee, since this particular witness was a longtime member of the Federal Bureau of Investigation. The purpose of the public reiteration of those names in an open hearing needs no comment.
If the committee is really concerned with assembling facts that might lead to legislation, why all the attention to the publicity value of the proceedings? Nearly all of the important business of this society, from merger negotiations to murder investigations, is conducted in private. Can you imagine the police interrogating you concerning an alleged crime and inviting to the proceedings your neighbors, the press, and the American Legion? The publicity value for this committee is obvious. Being anti-communist never hurt anyone on election day, and the committee's appropriation has been regularly approved by the Congress. But what about the effect of publicity for the subpoenaed witnesses? Listen to this interview of a spectator at the hearings, recorded by a radio station reporter.
There is one thing that I would like to say to continue, and that is that the American public, if the American public will watch it, in this investigation, they are being given, these communists or communist pinkos have to give their name and address, and that stamps them in the community. And it might be an interesting thing to note that if war ever comes out, ever comes forward, which we hope will never come, that different war veteran organizations, knowing these names, can strike the first blow at these people and finish them off before they can do any harm.
The unfriendly witnesses leveled charges at the committee regarding its purpose, its means, and its questionable legitimacy in the face of the First Amendment to the Constitution.
Are you now or have you ever been a member of the Communist Party?
Sir, I am 42 years of age and have never had to face a jury as defendant or grand jury as witness in my life. My research and writing have been so public that two committees similar to this one, the Senate Internal Security Subcommittee and the McCarthy Committee, subpoenaed me as far back as 8 and 7 years ago, respectively, for having written a book titled The Soviet Far East and Central Asia. No indictment resulted from those hearings either, or from my continued public speaking or writing since that date. Clearly, therefore, I have committed no crime under any of the laws of this country and am not engaged in subversion. Consequently, I refuse to testify on the grounds that as a radio and TV public affairs broadcaster active in those capacities today, the subpoena issued to me interferes with the rights of my stations to schedule informational programs on their merits, and is thus a direct violation of the First Amendment guarantee of freedom of speech and of the people's right to hear. Further, as a scholar with a 20-year record of research in public writing and lecturing in my chosen field, the study of the Soviet Union, a field admitted by all to be one in which this country is in vital need of knowledge, I refuse to testify on the grounds that the subpoena is a violation of freedom of inquiry, which can only be expressed through the free speech and free press guaranteed in the First Amendment to the academic community as to all others. Lastly, I certainly shall not answer questions representing allegations against me made by persons not present and not identified, whom I cannot confront and whom my lawyer cannot cross-examine as to their truthfulness. To rest my case solely on the First Amendment would, as 36 cases now in the courts show, condemn me to years of court action at enormous cost. It would cost me my home and impoverish my family for a very long time to come, which of course is what this committee desires. Therefore, I also refuse to testify under my right not to be a witness against myself, a right originated to protect the innocent. The guilty can be convicted by the testimony of others if there is any real evidence to present.
Meanwhile, in the rotunda outside the doors of the supervisor's chamber where the hearings were held, a tense situation was developing. Although the hearings had been advertised as open to the public, it was discovered by the students that they were more open to a certain segment of the public who were the recipients of the special white card invitations to the proceedings, bearing the signature of the committee's chief investigator, William A. Wheeler. This confused the issue somewhat, and certainly the white card issue was responsible for much of the misunderstanding between the police and the student demonstrators.
The first day of the hearings passed, and at each reconvening, progressively fewer students were admitted. Outside, a massive, well-ordered picket line ringed the city hall. Inside, the students loudly protested the committee, and now protested a second and more immediate grievance, the policy of the committee to keep out of its hearings all those who were opposed to its views. But the students reminded the chairman that, invitation cards or no, they were still there.
Friday came, the second day of the hearings, and once again the pickets turned out to trudge the sidewalks around City Hall. Once again a line formed in front of the hearing room doors. Once again preferential treatment went to the white card-bearing friends of the committee. Shortly after 11 o'clock, the following exchange took place between the students and Sheriff Carberry of San Francisco County.
This young lady had a question earlier.
Let's have it with my hands, please.
Why?
If you don't want us out here, are the white cards still going to be let in first?
My dear young lady, I explained yesterday and today as far as white cards. I knew nothing about it, did not know anything about it. As far as I'm concerned, so people who are here will be admitted by the committee. The committee.
Sir.
The House Un-American Committee. They've been spoken to in regard to it, and believe me...
You're directing the policemen. They're letting the white cards in.
They're not directing anyone in unless there are vacant
seats
within.
May I tell you
yesterday that the people who had these invitations here referred to did not represent 15% of the audience inside.
That's not true.
I was in all morning and they represented all of them.
Nobody was let in except white cards.
Let me ask.
One at a time.
Let me ask. you choose, and I would suggest respectfully you do that, to come back in an orderly manner here this afternoon and wait to get in. I'm certain that a representative group of sufficient number will get in. I'm asking you to do that. All we are concerned about the preservation of law and order, and I'm telling you now what the police responsibility this afternoon is in protecting the due process for all these other civil courts in this building.
Sure.
I'm not going to tell you anymore because I have more questions, and my office third floor, come up next week, we'll talk about it.
Why don't you move him out to the park?
I'm suggesting that the park is your place. You may go there right
now. Well, we'd like to see these people.
No one has thrown you out. We were thrown out.
I don't know a thing about your being thrown out. I haven't seen you before in my life.
There are 20 vacant seats in there. People here could be in there.
Sheriff's department on their arm.
Now, wait a minute, please. A lot of questions that I hear and a lot of answers I don't know. I told you what we're trying to do within our legal responsibility in law enforcement preserving peace. I am suggesting to you that this committee will adjourn in a matter of a few minutes now to reach that point for lunch. Suggest you'd like to come back and wait in an orderly manner and act in an orderly manner this afternoon, you may wait here. But if you act in a disorderly manner to disturbance of peace, you're placing yourself subject to arrest. I mention that to you because of the things I've told you.
Sheriff,
I don't have any more questions. I answered your question, son.
Why did the courts adjourn yesterday? I mean, why is it that they won't adjourn today if they adjourned yesterday on the
Are you suggesting that they adjourn these courts because you want to make this?
I'm only saying that they adjourned yesterday.
Just want you to know that.
If they adjourned, then we weren't kicked out yesterday.
You weren't kicked out.
No, we weren't. I said we weren't, and they did adjourn. Why is this not happening today?
If you act in a quiet, orderly manner today, you may stay here.
Well, we didn't act in a quiet, orderly manner yesterday. We acted in an orderly manner, but not a very quiet manner yesterday.
Did you learn anything from yesterday?
Yes, sir.
Tells you to leave a room and you'll be able to come back in after lunch. He doesn't know what he's talking about.
Not a darn person got in.
I was 20 men from this door in the afternoon. I was in there in the morning. No one without a white card.
At all?
Yes, all day yesterday morning.
I appreciate your cooperation. I understand the situation. You know.
But you cooperated with us yesterday. Why
am I cooperating now?
It's true.
But I'm cooperating now.
I know you're right.
To the fullest extent.
Definitely, but I...
To the fullest extent. I'm only telling you what the situation is in this building.
I understand that, but it was the same yesterday.
Inadequate in size to handle everybody. We accept that.
It was the same yesterday. Why is there a change?
We're cooperating to the fullest extent.
Why wasn't this made yesterday, this ultimatum?
Before we decide upon anything, could I suggest we keep it orderly? If the sheriff will be kind enough to stay around and answer questions and not make it necessary for us to act in any arbitrary way, either at his suggestions, as he admits in some cases uninformed, or on ours, which may be uninformed. Can we have hands? And if the sheriff will be so kind, will he answer the questions to the best of his
ability? I will be here all day.
Here.
Here. I'm here all day. Available all day.
Sheriff, would it be possible? It seems to me that the same people call. Have been in there all day.
I'll be back here at 2 o'clock. I'll be back.
It comes back.
I've been here all day as I was all day yesterday.
Well, this is something
and you've had complete cooperation. Is that correct?
And we will cooperate. And if they cooperate with us at 2, and let us in.
I'm here.
On an equal time basis.
I'll be here however they
then at 2 o'clock, he'll hear from us again.
The sheriff will be back here
at 2. Sheriff, is that
right?
We shall cooperate with you until 2 o'clock. And if you keep your promise and let everybody go into that hall, first come, first serve basis, we'll cooperate. But if we're kept out of here,
I'm sorry. I have nothing to do with the admissions. I told you.
If at that time we find out that all law enforcement agencies, including the committee which says it is a law enforcement agency, will allow people to go into that hall on a free and democratic basis, that is first come and first serve, we will cooperate with the law enforcement agencies. However, I would suggest to the group, if the law enforcement agencies, either true or not so true, do not cooperate with us, that we do organize, we do use our free assembly, our right to petition, we do it orderly, but we do it loudly. Are you with me?